This is Rainbow Six Radio, bringing you
the Next Generation Podcast for talk, news, and information for all things Rainbow Six.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Rainbow Six Radio. I am your host, Icy Cat, along with co-host Captain. How's it going today, Captain?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. So we also have a special guest host with us today. We've had Neely Bobber on a few times who we've played with, and now we have another one of our fellow regular squad mates, Thunder Sniper. How are you doing, man?
Clutch King from Cincinnati, Thunder!
Hey, how's it going, guys?
So we've got a lot of things happening this week that we'll be talking about throughout the show, but we wanted to first go ahead and introduce Thunder. You know, I guess I just kind of wanted to start with, first of all, Thunder, how did you get started with Rainbow? Because you were playing before we met up in game, right?
Yeah, so I remember seeing like the very first release gameplay footage they released back on years ago. And then I finally saw they were doing alpha testing with Ubisoft. You know, I do a lot of Ubisoft game alpha tests. So when I got the chance to get into the Siege one, you know, I got the code, I downloaded the game, and I've just been playing since alpha. And then I'm pretty sure that a friend I met while playing alpha brought me into your guys' group.
Right. So that would be Gung Ho, who we've mentioned on the show before, but he was also one of my co-moderators on the official Rainbow Six subreddit. He was somebody that I knew from there, and we started playing, and then he kind of, you were part of his clique, so to speak, and then we kind of, you know, started all playing together as a bigger group. So that's kind of how we got started. And as Captain had referenced, you did kind of earn the nickname Clutch King of Cincinnati. I don't know why you're not from Cincinnati. Did we ever get a story for why that was Cincinnati?
So that was Gung Ho. He, I would get these, I guess that's something I've always been great at. I've always been known for getting the clutches for the team. I work better under pressure. And one night he just yelled like Clutch King of Cincinnati. And I was like, you know, I'm not from Cincinnati. He's like, I know, but it's what rolls off the tongue better. So from that point on, it just kind of stuck. And then when he brought me into your guys' group, he started saying it and you guys just caught right on. And I was just like, I have to give you guys disclosure. I have to give everybody the disclosure that I'm not from Cincinnati every time it starts.
Yeah, for sure. So, and I will go ahead and back that up because as part of our squad of regular players, you definitely do have the ability to kind of pull out those clutches and as you said, work well under pressure. So that is something that is a great benefit to our squad as a whole. You know, I would say that certain people within our squad can sometimes, not always, but some of us have certain niches that we fall into well. And I would say you just having that, I don't know if it's a role per se, but it's just a position you find yourself in and then you do well in, is having those high pressure clutch situations. So
it's a pleasure.
It is wonderful to have you on our side and get the clutches for us and not clutch against us.
So in that vein, along with all that knowledge that comes with being the Clutch King, can you give us, we've been doing this segment called the Pro Tip, and you had some knowledge you wanted to drop for our audience, right?
Yeah, so I was just going to give, like, it's kind of a clutch tip, but this can also work just for teams in general or keeping people from clutching. And what it really comes down to it is a mixture of time management and knowing don't get too hungry for those kills. What it is, because the number of games I've seen lost or I've clutched in when they're all like, there's only one guy or there's only two guys, you know, it's like these 5-on-1 or 5-on-2 situations, everybody goes rushing for those kills, they pick them off and, you know, bring it down, next thing you know, it's a fair on fight. So really, really it's just like people need to realize, like, if you have time, take your time in the game. You know, when the game first came out, it was very much promoted like this is a slow tactical shooter. Now the meta's changed drastically since then.
Yeah.
But you still need to take time. Like that's a key. Like most of my clutches are from, you know, defenders rushing out looking for me or attackers just rushing the objective really sloppy one at a time. You still need to strategize. So it's really just use your time management, assess the situation, grab the intel you can, and just take your time. This can go for, you know, when you have the odds, just don't be cocky, or if the odds are against you, gather intel, you know, do what you got to do slowly, but you still can't be, of course, too slow or else you'll lose the round from time if you're attacking.
I will say, as a confirmation, Thunder Sniper is definitely one of the most patient players that I have ever played with.
Yeah. One of the things that I feel like you have a good sense of, too, is just I feel like you have good game sense. I just wonder if there's any tips you have on how a person might develop a better game sense.
I'm really not sure exactly how I would put it into explanation, really. It's really just really listen. I mean, like, if you have a good headset or you don't have a good headset, I mean, sound is, like, one of the best keys you can have. Like, you know, I don't know if you guys remember, but I had that clutch on Oregon, not Oregon, Clubhouse one time where I was above the guy in garage, and we sat there for 2, 3, 4 minutes with the game, you know, just both of us securing the objective. I finally heard him reload his gun, so I knew his exact location.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember this.
You guys remember that? Yeah.
I do. Yep.
So really just like being very aware of the sounds around you and trying to be as quiet as you can. And then also is map knowledge, of course, is a huge one, especially in Siege. So knowing very popular routes, very popular, you know, sit down camp locations.
Right.
And then finding the unpopular ones to use against them, or just very like unorthodox ones. Like sometimes just laying prone right next to a corner, nobody would ever expect that. You'll catch them off guard.
Well, hopefully these are some tips that we can bring into the new season that's now going live, which as we record it today is Wednesday the 11th. So, you know, this new season just went live last night for us. And so by the time this is released, you know, it may have been a couple of days for the people listening to the podcast. But with the new season now being live, we've talked a lot about our opinions on it, you know, between Captain and I, and shared that. But I'm just kind of wondering, Thunder, what maybe are some of your thoughts on, you know, maybe whether it's the new operators or the new map or maybe some of the new features that are coming with Void Edge? You know, just, you know, what are some of your opinions on the new season?
I'm really excited to see Oryx snagged in. I don't see him being super overpowering. I'm just hoping he's not underwhelming for the most thing. I think it's going to be really fun. I think it's going to be fun to set up some nice traps with him, because I realized he had the deployable camera, and I know I have a plan to kind of set him up against, set up a camera down the hall and then just wait on the other side of a soft wall. And I'd really like to at least pull it off once to catch them walking down that wall and just bash through the wall and eliminate, you know, even if it's just one player, like, it'll all be worth it.
Yeah.
Just do that, like, surprise, like, boom, like, here I am, you know, and then just gun them down or something.
Right.
I will say we did a lot of testing for some of Icy Cat's YouTube videos that will probably come out soon about the new operators, and it was not underwhelming playing as Oryx. It was really fun. And we actually were able to find some really cool ways to use his ability. So
yeah, there's a lot of,
stay tuned.
One comparison I made in the video that I'm editing now, and this should be up tomorrow, so by the time people hear the podcast, it should be the same day. The video will also be available. But one thing that I kind of was learning through the testing process when it came to Oryx was thinking about him as a roamer, that, like, that's his thing. He specializes in roaming. He even says it in his description that he's a roamer. But, like, right, where Kavera is very subtle and stealthy, he's, like, unashamedly brute force, just, you know, bashing walls and climbing hatches and flying all over the place. So, you know, he's kind of got, like, the ability to roam like a Kavera as far as primary role, but he does it in a very different way. And it's really interesting to see. You can have two roamers playing at the same time with completely polar opposite play styles. And one thing I was also thinking about is that while maybe he is, you know, this loud, you know, bear bashing through all the walls and stuff like that, you know, if you've got a Cav on your team, she can kind of come along and sort of stealthily make use of those new rotations that he's right, breaking in, you know, through walls and things like that. So, you know, there's a lot of cool counterplay that goes there, but he's definitely a better roamer than I first thought maybe he would be. I thought at first maybe he'd just be like, right, eh, okay. But now I'm seeing more and more possibility with him.
with Cav, you know, if you knew that Cav was going against you, you would always be terrified that that silent step was coming, and you never knew it was coming. And now, you know, in addition to that silent step, now when you hear that rhino just running down the hall, you're like, oh my God, what do I do? What do I do? Where do I go? So it's going to be a whole nother level of fear for the attackers, mm-hmm. and I am all for it.
Yeah. Definitely. Thunder, what do you think about the new Oregon rework? Have you seen it? Have you checked it out for yourself?
I never got a chance to get on it yet. I haven't actually played on it yet.
Everything just went live yesterday today. For us.
Yeah, yeah. And I had updating issues, so I never got the chance to do it like I wanted to. But from what I have seen of it, I think it looks a lot better. I was never a fan of the original Oregon for the simple fact of, you know, just some of the ways, like, I was like, why is there so heavy roaming here? But I was like, I feel like it's impossible to roam here because there was only one route. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think the way, from what I have seen, the way they're kind of redoing and adding little turns and peaks here and there, I think it's going to be a really nice, like, big upgrade. I'm hoping that it's going to be as good as the cafe rework. That's kind of the standard I've held up to reworks because I love the new cafe personally.
I will say from the time that I've spent on the Oregon rework is that it's kind of not like the cafe rework in that for cafe rework, there's parts of the map. Cafe rework almost seems to be more similar to clubhouse rework. There's parts of the map that are unchanged, you know, and then there's parts of the map that are very different. But there's very few parts of Oregon that are unchanged. So even rooms that were maybe kind of the same as they were, I'm thinking of like Armory, up on the second floor there across from, you know, where like dorms used to be, that room is more or less the same as it was, but it has a hatch now that drops down to the garage below. So even rooms that are unchanged have very different flow to them, you know? And so it's not like cafe or clubhouse where there's like whole chunks that are exactly the way they used to be. You know, there's very few sections of the map that are like untouched at all.
But it's like everything got a whole new coat of paint.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And I'm okay with larger changes like that, as long as we don't get like another Hereford situation. You know, like Hereford Base 2.0.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
I'd rather not.
Yeah.
Based on what I've played on it, and I mean just in the test server and what we did testing yesterday, it doesn't feel like that. Like Hereford Base, like the Hereford Base 2.0, it did kind of feel just like they ruined the map. And this did not feel like that at all. It was like, oh, there's a new way of hitting this, or oh, there's a new way of like looking at this, and oh, you know, this is cool. And
right.
So I'm excited. I'm excited that they did this. I still like the original Oregon. And you know, obviously if they did like a classic playlist, that'd be really cool, but I'm excited for this one.
Yeah. So one thing that we've been seeing rear its ugly head, and we've seen this in a couple of the previous seasons before since they introduced pick and ban, but people have been using, now that the season is live, pick and ban to block the two new operators and basically ruining the effect of having a season pass, because of course you get 7-day exclusivity. And so people are going into ranked, pick and ban is coming up, both new operators are being blocked by the opposing team, locking them out of whatever season pass access they may have. And there's no reason to do it, because it's not like they're doing meta bans. It's not like they're doing it for strategy bans. They're doing it just to right. troll, right? So I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on that.
I mean, it's kind of expected to come. The larger a gaming community gets, the more toxic players it's going to get. So it's almost like we should have seen it coming to a point when we realized pick and ban was going to be involved. The way I would say fixing it is, we need to keep it in ranked, because if we have another situation where the new ops were to be super overpowered, like when Blackbeard first came out, I mean, like he was an unstoppable force when he first came out. It was ridiculous. You know, it'd be nice to be able to ban him. So that's where I think when unranked comes in, though, that's where they should have their difference, where in unranked, you can't ban the new ops, at least for their first few weeks, you know. This way, you can still play them, but still have that ranked play style. And then, of course, we don't have to worry about it at all casual, so it's not a problem there. Right. But I would say for ranked, let them keep banning them. I mean, sorry, you know, you're not going to be able to play them while trying to earn your rank, but would you really want them in the game if they were game-breaking to begin with?
I kind of agree with Thunder. You know, toxic people are going to be toxic. Trolls are going to be trolls. I do feel like if you're paying money for the season pass and you're getting that 7-day, you know, chance to play these operators before everyone else does, I do think that not only unranked, but I think in ranked too, because they're paying this money, I mean, because I paid this money, I feel like they should not be able to ban the new operators. I think that's just toxic as all hell. That's ridiculous.
Right.
And I mean, people are just trying to be, you know, jerks to everyone else. And, you know, yes, it is a very big community, so people are just trying to get under people's skin and stuff. But I feel there's a really easy way for Ubisoft to solve that problem. But
I think for my perspective on this is that I don't think that the new operators should be bannable initially, because while I do respect the Blackbeard comparison, it's not being done for the reasons of brokenness. And I would feel like there could be a solution. Like, Ubisoft has some things on their end where they can do rollbacks, or they can disable operators like Clash or things like that. So if they get to a place where a new operator comes out, and we'll just call it Blackbeard 2.0 rolls out, right, where it's just like so overpowered, completely game breaking, they have the ability to disable that operator on their end. Or even if you don't want to go that route, they would have the ability to turn on pick and ban privilege for the new operator if the community was saying that it needed to be done. But I think as a default, it shouldn't be, because how else are you going to expose the problems that a new operator may introduce into the meta if they're not being played within the wider meta and it's being denied by a bunch of trolls that are kind of preventing that from getting out there? Because what's going to happen is, as soon as that new operator comes out, a lot of people are going to start picking them. They're going to be like the hot pick, right? So they're going to be used the most. As the season progresses over time, those new operators aren't played as much. How many people are still picking Amaru? How many people are still picking Goyo? Not as many as they were when the new season was available for them. After the season gets old and the new guys come out, like, they're really not the hot thing anymore, right? So now in this situation, if you allow them to be in their picking prime, so to speak, they will get the most exposure, and that will expose the most flaws, so that if they are game breaking, that's out there right away, so that by the time the next month's patch rolls around, Ubisoft can address it right off the bat. Okay, this operator needs 3 gadgets instead of 4, or a lower damage per second rating, or you know, higher recoil, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But if those operators are being blocked, you don't get that info. So I would say that it would be best to prevent the new ops from being banned, at least in the first month of the season, so that they can get all of that. What do you guys think about that?
I agree with that. I feel like that's a good compromise for sure. What about you, Thunder?
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. Yeah, I'll agree with it, because I was also thinking, you know, the argument to my own is it was like you said, like if it really is that bad, I guess the developers, I mean, they turned off Clash fast enough when there were glitches with her, so they could turn off these operators specifically for ranked.
Right, and we're talking about something game breaking. You know, Blackbeard
2.0 situation. Yeah. So,
I don't think either of these operators have game breaking abilities like Clash did, but I could be wrong. Yeah.
Even Clash's ability wasn't game breaking. It was Clash's the glitch that you could use to fire her guns with through her shield, making her invulnerable while she shot you. That was game breaking. Like, the fact that she has a shield isn't game breaking, but yeah.
Right. I could definitely see something with Oryx's ability, them finding some sort of glitch with it, but I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen, honestly.
Right. So one thing I kind of wanted to explore a little bit in this week's episode is the long-term outlook of the game, right? They've got this, like, 10-year plan that they're going on right now, and they're doing some things to the game. In last week's episode, we talked about the value of the season pass and what we thought about it. Or was that 2 weeks ago? Recently, we talked about the season pass and the value we thought that it gave to the game. And that kind of got me thinking, and I wanted to sort of expand on that with you, is that as a game matures over time, right, they're no longer going to be selling like tons and tons of new copies of the game. Of course, right. You know, they will always sell new copies of the game, but it's not going to rise to the level that sustains the development team to continue to producing content on that alone. And they do have the annual season pass. They do have things like the special events that come with their alpha pack things that you have to like buy for the loot crate kind of thing or whatever. You know, they have other, you know, the elite skins come out, and those are, you know, transactions that wind up producing some income for the game. And I think that when it comes to looking at how everything goes long term, we're seeing them try some new things. For instance, the battle pass. And there's, of course, the free battle pass, or there's the premium tier battle pass, you know, that you pay a little bit to get into. And it's, you know, they're trying some new stuff for how they're looking at monetizing some things in the game to continue to support that long-term development plan. And I was wondering, just, you know, as you look at the game going forward, what other things could maybe they explore doing that could sort of generate that revenue to keep the content coming, but also not alienate the player base? You know, are things like the battle pass a good idea, or the premium tier of the battle pass? Are things like the special event, you know, loot alpha things a good idea? You know, what are some things that they're doing right or wrong, and what are some things that they can do going forward in the future that maybe as a community will embrace instead of kind of rail against?
Of course, making cosmetics are going to be their main revenue, or, you know, forms of it. So I would say really, really dive hard into, you know, weapon skins and skins for not even just weapons, but you could really branch out on stuff. And this stuff we've discussed a lot of is, you know, mix matching elite animations or putting skins on, I think barricades was one, you had Icy a while back. So I think if they start experimenting with that stuff, you know, make sure none of it's breaking, of course, because you don't want to have like a barricade skin out there that's going to somehow give an advantage through peeking through it, right?
Right.
So you still got to make sure that, you know, just choosing color template couldn't game break, which most likely wouldn't happen at all. But in the case that it did possibly happen, I think it's really not too much of a challenge, because there's really good skins out there that are like the Black Eye skin is one I talk about a lot. Everybody loved the Black Eye skin. This came out, you know, season one, year one. It was a really popular skin. They could re-release old skins that we never seen anymore. Like, you guys remember like the gem skins like Emerald and Ruby and all that, right?
Right, yeah.
I haven't seen them since. They could re-release those to be paid for, you know, with microtransactions.
And well, you can still get the gemstone skins. Those are under the digital content tab in the store, which is a separate tab. But if you go under there, you can still get the gemstone skins.
They could like promote it or do like a special alpha pack thing, you know, like you don't really ever hear about it anymore.
I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you on that specific point. And here's why. As somebody that's been around since, you know, even before the game actually launched, I have every Black Eye skin on all the operators that were available for when Black Eyes was available. And for me, that was a thing that showed, like, when people see that, they're like, oh, you know, this guy has, you know, Black Ice on a bunch of things. He's, you know, he earned that seasonal content because he was there at the time it was available. He's been playing that long. It's sort of, I don't want to say a badge of honor necessarily, but like you see certain skins that were only available that season and then no longer afterward. And you realize, oh, this is a person that's put in a lot of time to the game. And, you know, me being a newcomer that's maybe picked up the game 4 months ago, well, of course, I'm not going to get access to this skin. But, you know, if I start collecting now, you know, then I'll have, you know, skins from here going forward that are that. And I'm only talking about the seasonal ones, like the ones that were only available for that season. I think anything else is fair game to run a sale on or a special or whatever. But like things that are like, hey, you buy this during year one, season two, this is the only time you can get it. We're making a big deal out of this. You know, okay, you got it. Cool. By the way, 3 years later, we're going to offer it up again to everybody else. You know, like it sort of devalues it. It takes away from the rarity. It takes away from the specialness of it. And I'm only talking about the seasonal skins. I'm not talking about any other skins in the game for this, but that's kind of my thought.
Yeah.
It kind of makes you that OG player.
Right.
And that is something that's honorable for sure. And I kind of agree too. Like, I don't think, because, you know, like I said, I started late in the game. I started late in the season. I didn't actually really start playing until
it wasn't that late. It was year one, season three.
But, you know, like for me, I wasn't really into the game, so I didn't really buy Black Ice. And I think I have one for maybe Ash's pistol or something, and maybe one other gun. And, you know, it was like, oh, that's like, it's a cool skin. But like, you know, now kind of the same thing you were saying. It was like, oh, wow, like these cool. And now I can't ever get the skin, so I better start playing this game so I can get these seasonal skins. So the ones that I think are actually cool, I can play, and then I can be in the same situation, like, you know, playing with a random group of guys. Or someone sees my skins like, oh, that's cool. Where can I buy it? You can't. Season three. Mic drop.
My son will sometimes play on my account.
Yep.
And he will pull out like the Glacier skin. And he says all the time, people are like, oh, where'd you get that skin from? Because like you can't get it. And so, you know, he'd be like, oh, you know, this is my dad's account and he had Glacier skin from forever ago. But like people recognize the rarity. And they'll comment on it, and you know they'll even send him like text messages, you know, and be like, where can I get that? What's the name of that or whatever, you know? So like, there's a little something to be said for that. That's kind of neat. And again, that's only the seasonal skins. I feel like, you know, like it's totally fair game on the other stuff. But aside from weapon skins, you know, I also think there's a lot of other things in the game that we can take a look at for skins that haven't been explored yet and clearly were intended to be. And what I mean by that is go under any grenade and there's a customization tab that's locked. It's always been there. It's locked. It has a little lock symbol on it and even says on it that it's locked. Clearly, there was, I mean, you can't add attachments to a grenade. What was that for? Clearly, it was intended to be for some kind of a skin. And those plans never panned out for whatever reason. So, you know, I don't know what they were going to wind up looking like exactly, but, you know, like, I don't know, maybe you put like a Campbell's soup label on your smoke grenade and then you roll it in and it looks like a can of soup or something like that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. But like the idea of putting skins on some of your secondary gadgets definitely appeared to be a concept that they coded into the game and then never did anything further with.
Well, and that's the thing, too, like something like that would be a very easy microtransaction that they could do and make a decent money on, because certain people would be like all over that. And the thing about that, and I'll say this, the thing that would be different from a grenade skin to a barricade skin is I think that if they did barricade skins, that would affect the game significantly. You have a dark color and you have dark clothes on, you break it once, someone might be running by and not actually see that it's broken open. Mm-hmm. You know, that green and yellow that it is now, there's no way that you can't see that something's broken open. So like a barricade skin, I feel like would just break stuff and make it damn near impossible for certain things. But like a grenade skin, how often do you actually see the grenade coming towards you?
You never see the grenade.
Not very often.
You see the threat indicator, the grenade icon.
Exactly.
You know, but you never, like, I can't remember the last time I, like, looked at the grenade. Like, I'm running away from it. I'm not looking at it.
Exactly. So this would be a very easy way for them to make money that doesn't actually affect the game, but the attacker or defender, I mean, you know, why not do impact grenades too? Just put a big smiley face on that thing and toss it.
Oh, my God. I would love that.
But that would be amazing. It would be hilarious. But like, you know, something like that, the whoever is buying the skin is going to be happy that, you know, I have this random weird thing on my grenade. No one's going to actually see it, but whatever. Every time I throw the grenade, I'm going to think about Campbell's soup now.
Right. Well, you see it in your hand before you throw it. That's the important thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you get to see it, and then it goes off. It kills whoever. And, you know, to you, it's like, ha, you got killed by soup. Next time, maybe use a can opener, you idiot. But, you know, like, that's something that's super easy that, like, wouldn't affect the game in a way that it would give someone a disadvantage or someone else an advantage. And it keeps the players happy. And I think that's really good. And I also kind of like when it comes to drones, too, I feel like that's something that's super underwhelming. You know, I feel like it'd be really easy to give some just weird drone skins. And you know what? That's one of those things that like if you can get kind of weird with that. And if that means that your drone is a little bit more visible, you know, you're paying for that. If you want that, whatever. Some people just like to troll on their drones anyway. So.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I'm all for it, especially the grenades, you know, like Captain was just saying, you know, a big smiley face. Or, you know, I remember, I don't know if you guys ever did, but like Army 2 40th Day when that came out, you could buy different grenades. And there was one, the very last grenade, the most expensive one you could buy was like a blind grenade. And it was just a solid gold grenade with diamonds embedded in it. And it even, you know, when it exploded, you just saw sparkle go everywhere instead of a generic explosion. So they could even get as advanced that, you know, I could throw a grenade in.
Right.
And then like Dan was, he was also mentioning, you know, with the drones, you know, we saw it back in the Rainbow's Magic, you know, we saw a little,
Rainbow's Magic.
We saw a little pink drone driving around. So we could totally do stuff with drones. Especially, you could give, you know, Twitch her own special drones too. For Twitch mains out there.
Well, and the thing about Rainbow's Magic that I thought was really neat was it was not lost on me that they skinned the drone pink in the map where there are so many. In Rainbow's Magic, there were so many pink walls or pink tables and chairs or whatever. Like, there was a lot of places you could put that drone and it would sort of disappear into the environment because of the skin that was on it. It wasn't lost on me that they were trying it out to say, what happens if we skin a drone and make it hard to see? Is it pay to win? You know, like does this confer some kind of, you know, magical thing? And so I feel like they were definitely testing out that concept. Now, I don't know what the results of their data were. You know, maybe they tried that and they're like, ooh, yeah, drones like had a markedly noticeable drop in being spotted and shot as a result of this test. Maybe they have that data and I don't know, right? I have no idea. But they definitely did try it out. So a drone is something I could see could potentially, like Captain was just saying with barricade skins, could potentially skirt the pay-to-win concept. But Ubisoft is also in charge of what the skins would be. Like, if there's something that could be, like, maybe they only release things of a neutral palette, or maybe they only release things of, you know, like super bright, loud, you know, colorful skins. And like Captain was saying, like, if you want to pay for something that makes your drone twice as easy to spot, then cool on you. You know, you can do that. So they're kind of in control of, like, you know, whether it's super camouflaged or not, I guess, as a skin, right?
But, well, and that's the thing, too. Like, we were – even when we were testing yesterday, I don't remember – was it our friend Bastion was playing with – was it Jaeger or was it Bandit? And it looked like a character from Tron, the outfit that he had.
Oh, right.
It
he had the so rogue outfit for Jaeger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, people are spending money on that. And it's like, I could see you in the dark.
Right.
But people are still paying for it.
Or the Legion headgear from the Halloween event. It's like that glow-in-the-dark thing.
I also, sorry to kind of go back into this too, but I also feel like now, since they have talked about doing the weekend arcade playlist thing, that I'm sure they can make a ton of money on doing just random skins and charms and stuff off of that.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. So we've had before these various events, you know, Madhouse, Doctor's Curse, Wild West Showdown, Rainbow's Magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these things come with these alpha pack collections that are special to that event, and right. There's like, I don't know, 25 of them or 50 of them or whatever, and you get a free one for playing, you get maybe another free one or two for completing some challenges, and then beyond that, if you want more, you have to buy pack bundles. And none of them are duplicates. Mm. You'll never get a duplicate, but you also have no idea what you're getting because it's RNG, right? I open an elf pack. I don't know what it is, but I had to pay money for it, not renown. So So that's what they've done with events in the past. What do we think about that as a concept for monetization?
Not a fan, personally. I've never been... I like how Ubisoft usually does alpha packs where it's, you know, you can unlock it during the game. It's only cosmetics. But you can use renown, right? I don't like it when it's pay for only and it's locked behind a paywall. I don't think anything should ever be locked behind a paywall unless it's... Or an RNG paywall, I should say. You know, having like a skin, you know, directly you're going to get it if you pay for it. I can see that. But when it's like, I'm paying for this pack, I'm betting I'm going to get the skin. I mean, you know, that really hits that controversial ground of, is this gambling in a video game, you know?
Right.
So I don't think if it's using the in-game currency, you know, like if we used renown, great. But if we're only allowed to use our 6 credits and you're not guaranteed what you want without buying like every single possible pack to get it, I just think that shouldn't be in the game, you know?
Right. I feel like as a consumer, I should never be asked to spend my money and not know what I'm getting in exchange for my money.
Right.
So if the Ash Elite skin is only available for Rainbow Six credits and I know that, and I purchase those Rainbow Six credits to buy that Ash Elite, I know what I am spending my money on. Even though it is money rather than renown, I know that this is the value I am getting for the money I spend. Whereas with these RNG loot alpha packs, that's set up that I'm putting in $20 and I have no idea if I'm even going to get what I want from it. Maybe I get 80% of that is charms and 3 stupid headgears I didn't want. And meantime, the uniform and the one weapon skin I wanted, I still didn't get and have to pay another $20 for and hope maybe I get it. Like, I don't think that's a very player-friendly model. And I don't know. I feel like maybe that would be a direction I hope that they don't continue to go in.
I hope that they kind of tone that down. Or maybe even... if you're going to do the random stuff, maybe it's X amount of renown. And then if you want to buy a very specific headgear or weapon skin or uniform, you can actually spend renown, maybe a little bit extra, but at least you're spending that on the exact thing that you want.
Right.
I feel like they should be able to do the combination of both, but I feel like also doing that they'd fall into that they're losing money because now people are just spending all of their renown hoping to get what they want, mm-hmm. and then when they don't, then they'll spend a small amount of renown or rainbow credits to get it. But
you know, the microtransactions that are in the game is something I've always spent a lot of time thinking about because I recognize the sustainability model that's at work there. Like, you have to be able to finance the salaries of all the developers that continue to work in the game for years and years and years if you want them to continue to produce new content. Like, nobody does that for free. You have to pay for that, right? So sustaining the game, you know, I mean, like, one way to do it is still continue to do season pass or these various microtransactions. But I feel like there's so much unexplored space where there could be just really amazingly cool things that they just haven't hit into yet. You know, like Thunder was mentioning before about how, like, you could throw out an impact grenade and in addition to the smoke, maybe there'd be like a little bit of sparkle dust or something like that. I don't know. Right. Personally, not for me, but I can understand that some people would be all about getting something like that. What if it's something that's even more toned down? Like, what if you can buy alternate colors for your smoke grenades? Like, your smoke goes off and instead of being gray, it's blue. Or instead of being blue, it's orange or whatever. Like, you just color your smoke. Like, you know, would that be something people would buy? Or we had also talked about mixing elite animations with other uniforms. Do you know how many elites I would buy in addition to the ones I already have if I could mix the animation with any uniform I wanted to? There are some operators...
100%.
Yeah, there are some operators I cannot stand the way the uniform looks for the elite, but I'm all about that victory animation. But because I can't put it on any other uniform, I'm like, why bother? But if they did that,
I agree with that.
I would be all about purchasing more of those, and I think a lot of other people would be more open to that concept as well.
I would be very careful. I like the mixing animations, so I'll get to that here in a second. The smoke grenade changing, you got to be very careful with, because Smoke, the operator, you know, he has the yellow smokes. So just, I could already see it, somebody being confused and getting killed, be like, oh, I thought that was yours, when really the attackers just threw in a bunch of yellow smoke grenades.
You know, so that's actually a really good point.
That kind of situation.
That's a really good point. So, okay, so then maybe they only do cool colors for Smoke. Right, and like yellows, oranges, reds are kind of off the table for the actual smoke gas grenades. But, I mean, you do bring up a good point.
Blue smoke was in the game. Capitao originally used blue smoke for his bolts when he first came out.
Yep.
But we know at least one color is in the archive somewhere.
Right.
So it's not unheard of at all. But, yeah, mixing elite animations is something that I didn't buy a single operator elite until Thatcher's, because either the operators was like, oh, it's a cool skin, but I really don't play the operator enough, it's not worth getting. But I was like, Thermite and Capcan, I would have bought them instantly if it wasn't for the outfits. I can't stand them, especially Thermite's. His, like, the worst. The helmet he's wearing, like, I think his head goes, like, twice in size compared to the original.
Right.
Like, it's just... Well, I can't stand it.
And there's an interesting side story about that, because I've brought up this point of discussion before online in, like, you know, chats or forums or what have you. And people are like, oh, you can't mix them. It won't let you. And be like, actually, that's not true. Because, first of all, if anybody knows anything about, like, skinning character models and animation, the uniform is just a skin the model wears. It's not like the animation is hard coded to the uniform. There's a skeletal structure that carries out an animation, and then a skin is applied to it, and it wears that skin, right? So it's not like you have to code the animation to the uniform. And we saw evidence of this happening in what I thought was the most awesome way possible during the original Halloween event, not Doctor's Curse, but the Madhouse Halloween event. It was when they first came out with some of those, like, scary Halloween uniforms. And they had this one of Thermite where he was, like, I don't know, was he supposed to be, like, maybe a Vietnam vet or a World War II vet or something? He was wearing, like, olive drab, and he had on this helmet. And, like he had been hit by a direct mortar strike or something. Like, his skin was melted off, and his eyeballs were coming out of his head, and he was all bloody.
Yeah, I remember that.
And people discovered that if they were wearing – so what the event did – the event forced you to wear the special event uniforms so that when you played the event, everybody that picked the operator had the special event uniform on, right? And then that made it so that people could see the uniforms. They're like, oh, that looks really cool. I want to buy it so I have it outside of just this mode and outside of just this one-month event. But what it did was it overrode what you were already wearing. So people that were already wearing the Thermite Elite were still technically wearing it underneath the uniform that got stuck on top of it. So what would happen is Thermite's Elite animation would carry out. And of course, Thermite's Elite animation is like he has this like flash powder on his hands. So he rubs them together and then he smacks them. And then on the impact, the flash powder ignites and it looks like he's got flames coming out of his hands. And it's actually like a chemistry trick. And because he's a chemist, you know, that's kind of the tie-in with that. But here's this bloody, just tore up horror version of Thermite, and he rubs his hands together in this hell event, and the flames come shooting out of his hand, and it looks amazing. And it was the first proof of concept of seeing an elite operator's animation mixed with a non-elite uniform, and it was so epic to see.
For sure.
Some other ideas that I had thought of that would sort of be outside of the realm of anything they've ever done before, but like, how cool would it be if you could buy skins for things that were maybe, like, say maybe you could buy skins for terrorists. Like, if you're playing Terrorist Hunt, we know that those things, they're just gray and black and white head to toe. They blend in with the environment.
Right.
But what if you could, like, and I understand it would probably be a more sizable transaction. You know, it wouldn't be, like, 99 cents or whatever. But, you know, buying a skin that turns all of the terrorists when you have them to wearing, like, suit and ties and sunglasses, you know. Or what if it had to all, like, you know, jeans and hoodies and variations on that so they looked, you know, like street thugs or something. Or another variation where it turned them all into guys wearing like yellow biohazard suits, kind of like how the bomber had the white biohazard suit. You know, just so you could get like some variation on what the enemies you're playing against maybe would look like. That'd be kind of neat.
For sure.
I kind of wanted to move into this next section here and talk a little bit about some things that we like about Siege, and then maybe a few things that we don't like about it, just so we can kind of get sort of a baseline comparison of where the things are in the game that we all kind of feel strongly about one way or the other. So let's start with some things that we really like about Siege, and maybe just do, you know, like a couple of things each. Captain, what do you think?
One of the things that I really enjoy about Siege is the play style, the strategy behind it, coming up with different ways to attack different objectives. Team communication is really cool. I feel like there aren't a lot of games, especially multiplayer games, that have that, mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to shooters, you know, other like MMO RPGs and stuff. There's definitely some communication and strategy, but like to attack an objective, that's not something you see very often. So I think those are probably two of my favorite things.
Okay. Thunder, how about you?
I'm going to go down to probably, I say my favorite thing about this game really is when it comes down to it, is gunplay and the time to kill. A lot of shooters, you know, it's depending on the weapon stats, you know, you can shoot someone in the head, but they'll magically survive, you know, 2.556 bullets going straight through their brain, which to me has never made sense, and it's always been kind of annoying. So one of the things that drew me into Siege was the fact that every gun's a one-shot headshot. Mm-hmm. And to this day, that is still one of my favorite things about the game. It's just, it's so satisfying that I can use any weapon in the game, and if I have the accuracy to hit you in the head, it's over. You know, I win the gunfight. It can be the Hail Mary. It can just be, you know, the best surprise mechanic. And it really, to me, compared to other shooters, you know, pistols are just as powerful as other weapons if you're really good and accurate with them, you know? Mm-hmm. Because in other video games, you can light someone up with that handgun. It doesn't matter how many times you hit them in the head, you know, they're still probably going to outgun you. In this game, you know, you can shoot 5 rounds of a submachine gun or even assault rifle, depending on the gun, square into my chest. But if I get the one shot, you know, directly in the middle of your forehead with the pistol, I still win because I had the skill to hit in the head.
Right.
Absolutely.
I think for me, the thing I like most about Siege is also one of the things I do not like about Siege, is that it's so unique that it has wrecked for me any other multiplayer shooter. And I also hate that it has wrecked for me every other multiplayer shooter.
Absolutely.
Because like, I can't jump into like a Call of Duty or a Battlefield or anything anymore, because I'm like, I want to knock a hole in this wall. I want to blow up this floor. I want to, you know, like do this. And like, there's some games that do a little bit of that, you know, like Battlefield has the Frostbite engine. And so, you know, if you take this tank, you can blow a hole in this wall, but it's like, it's the same thing every time. I can't get on that very fine detail level and just take, you know, just this specific chunk out of this specific section and look through the floorboards and see the guy underneath. Like, that's either very difficult in a game, or if a game does do it, there's only some certain places and 90% of the map you can't do it on because it's mostly open spaces. And, you know, to me, it's like, that's what this game revolves around. The destruction mechanics and the strategy and the that to me is one of the things I enjoy the most. And it has really wrecked every other kind of shooter game for me in comparison. Another thing I really like is that I love that this game gives you something to do, a role to fill, even when you die. Like, I have tried to watch Battle Royale games, and I'm just like, I'm just not into it. Because, like, okay, you know, you die, and then you just sit there, and you're kind of, like, waiting for, like, okay, now what? You know, like, you're not respawning in, so what do you have to do? And other games solve that problem by being respawn meat grinders.
Right.
Oh, you died. Well, you're back in 10 seconds later. meat grinder some more, you know, but Siege actually has a role for you. You're dead. Okay, that sucks. Sorry to hear it. Now jump on cams, help out your team, do call outs. Even if all the cams are gone, find one of the other surviving players, watch their camera. Maybe that guy isn't in your chat lobby or whatever, or they're in their own private chat, and so your team can't hear what they're saying, but you can watch that player, and then you can give call out to your teams based on what that player is seeing that the rest of your team, you know, can't be aware of because they're on a different mic channel. You have a role to play in observation that still assists your team to win the game. Even after your death, you have that job. And I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. That is really awesome.
Yeah.
There is not a game that is an option for in anything else. So it is really fun. And I definitely, as one who tends to die very quickly in certain games, I can contest to, you know, sometimes just being on someone else's drone while people are around and, you know, I hear someone walking in archives right now, or, you know, someone is peeking garage down spiral staircase. You know, just easy things that like gives that person that heads up because they can't see it, they can't hear it. And if they don't know that that's there, they could be trying to get a pixel peek somewhere else and, you know, wind up getting shot. So it is really awesome.
Another thing I like is, love it or hate it, the dev team is constantly innovating. They're always trying new stuff. I cannot imagine a game like Call of Duty or Battlefield. And first of all, they can't, because they can't follow this model. There's a new one every year or every other year.
Exactly.
Right. So I can't even imagine them going to like a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. But like, even if they did, I would have a hard time imagining them finding new ways to continue to inject life into the game in the way that Rainbow Six does. You know, I mean, now, like, after we thought we've seen everything, you're like, well, now, you know, I mean, what can they do? They've already done it. Well, here comes your rework for Tachanka and Ping 2.0 and replay system and map bans. You're like, oh, that's what they can do. You know, it's just like they keep innovating in ways that just like go above and beyond. And I love that. That keeps it so fresh for me.
It really does. And I know there's been so many times that I've complained about certain things that I don't like, but at least they're like coming up with things. You know, like Call of Duty, it's like you play the game, you play multiplayer for a while, the game gets stale. All right, we'll come out with a new game. The campaign's different. That's about it, though.
But yeah, I feel like they have to justify whatever's new by creating an entirely new thing. It's almost like it's not strong enough to survive on its own.
Oh,
unless
for sure.
They come out with a new one, you know, whereas Siege is just like, yeah, okay, well, you know, we're going to take the I guess, like some games do have long-term plans of sticking around, you know, like Counter-Strike is a popular PC shooter that's been around like forever and forever and forever. And there's games like that, but they're not continually pushing new features and new mechanics and, you know, maps and just, I mean, like, well, I mean, sometimes maps depending on the game, but I mean, just that constant innovation pace is, I don't see it in any other game unless there's something I'm not thinking of. Okay, well, what about some things that maybe, I don't know if I want to say we don't like, but, you know, maybe it's something we don't like, or maybe it's something that they do that, maybe it's something we wish they would do better, or I don't know. I guess we'll start with you, Thunder. What do you think?
This is one that I very much don't like about the game, and I will stress this. This might be a little bit more at the developers, and that's the fact that they've taken content out of the game.
Oh my
god! It's
my
biggest. Yeah, like you guys have mentioned it slightly before, but this is something that like I'm constantly, every day I load up the game, I'm like, you know, this used to be better, and I compare it to this because simple fact that you literally took content away. Like, I paid for that content when I first bought the game. Like, the fact that you took maps out. Ranked, I can understand it. Unranked, still not a big fan. But I've really just gotten over it. But the fact that you've taken so many things out of casual, is unless the community cries for it, I don't think it should be taken out. Favela, when it was first taken out, everybody hated the map. I understood it. Bartlett being taken out, keep it that way. Tower being taken out, still, I'm okay with that. But when you're taking out fan favorite maps like House, Plane, you know, when Yacht was taken out, you know, that one was not nearly hated enough to me, seeing it reasonably taken out when it originally was. So Old Hereford, you know, that's one that I think could have stayed in the game. You know, you could have had Hereford, then you could have had Hereford 2.0. And the excuse of, oh, it's for new players to get used to the game, that's a dumb excuse. You have the newcomers playlist for a reason, you know, or they can just suck it up and learn it like everybody else who buys a new video game out there today, you know? You're not the only video game out there that has a bunch of content for you, for new players to jump in. It's going to be a learning curve the more you wait to join a game, but that's just video games in general, not just Siege.
Right. I wouldn't expect
that. I agree with you on part of that.
Go ahead, Captain.
I agree with you on part of that. You know, obviously with the ranked and the unranked, I understand why they take stuff out. Yes, I do feel like to a certain extent they should somewhat restrict map pools. Nothing crazy, because there is something to be said about having a rotation that's different. I will say what they're doing right now is ridiculous, and I think a really easy way for them to fix that would be to come up with a classic playlist, and maybe that's a new game mode, just classic playlist. You can pick whatever game mode you want, but that's where you get Hereford and Hereford 2.0. That's where you can still play House. That's where you can still play Plane, Favela, Yacht, stuff like that. Bartlett University, Tower can just go die, but you know, everything else. So like things that they take out of rotation, I get it, because there are a lot of maps, and sometimes they do need to do like slight changes to fix, you know, glitches and other sorts of things, and that makes sense. I get that. But to have maps that are just gone for you know, except for obviously you can play pretty much anything in custom, but like that's a whole nother issue in itself, and we kind of talked about custom stuff in last episode, but
so I'm gonna take a opinion here. Is that I disagree with the concept, because I've heard both of you say like there's certain maps, screw Tower, screw Favela, screw whatever. Like, you both said Tower. Here's the thing. I hate Tower, too. But I don't care. It should still be in there. And I'm talking about casual. I'm not talking about ranked. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about casual.
Right.
All maps should be in casual, period. I don't care if I hate the map. It should be in casual. Because here's why. Thunder, you listed Favela. You couldn't stand Favela. You couldn't stand Bartlett. I really enjoy Favela. It sucks to defend that top of Yellow Tower. Yes. Does it have problems? Yes. But at the same time, I love rocking shotguns on that map because it is tight CQB. I love that about it. There's parts I don't like defending the top of Yellow Tower, but there's almost no maps in the game where I can't say there's a flawed site on anyway. Right? So that's flawed site for that or whatever. And there's other things too. I mean, like Aunt's apartment is like that whole side panel can be way too opened up. There needs to be more solid walls on that. And, you know, I mean, it's got its flaws. But when it comes up, I enjoy it because I'm like, here's my map for my shotguns and my CQB strats. You know, it's all up close and tight. And, you know, it can really get intense. I enjoy that. Other people are like, I hate House. You know what? I love House. Is it the most balanced sites? Hell no, it's not the most balanced sites, but it's fun. And the engagements are, because the map itself is small, then the firefights, again, they're intense. Things can kind of go down quickly, and I love that. If I'm on a big map like, Fortress, for instance, you know, if I'm roaming far off of site and the team rushes objective quickly, you know, and they came from the other direction, I might not even see a guy that whole round before it's already over. And I'm like, I never saw anybody. So, you know, like, I love some of the smaller maps that other people hate. So I think you got to be careful when you say these are the maps that I think should be in there, but screw these other certain maps. Because whatever maps you don't like, you know, I actually don't mind Bartlett. Does Bartlett have problems? Yes. But you know what? Every once in a while, we'll dust it off in custom games, and it's like, yeah, that was cool. You know? I could certainly do with never playing Tower again, but I'm not going to take it away from people that love playing Tower. There are, believe it or not, some people.
I will say this about Tower, because I do hate Tower, and I know we all hate Tower, but we have come up with a way to make Tower fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And then every time we play Tower, we're all like, oh, Tower. But then we're all like, yes, this is fun.
So now you know what you have to do is you have to explain what we do. Because you can't just drop that and just be like, oh.
And goodbye, guys. We'll see you next week.
We pretty much, the only way we could figure out how to enjoy the map was random operators. And this was before, you know, the random operator option was there. We would literally have to wait for the whole timer to go down. So we never even got a chance to customize our operators until that random operator option was added, which was nice.
The AFK pick, yeah.
Yeah, and I think I've gotten more Tachanka turret kills on Tower than I have all the other maps combined, because for some reason the game was just like, here you go, here's Tachanka, and I got him. Like, I'd get him on Tower all the time.
Right.
I'm just like, I don't know why the game keeps doing this, but yeah, but it also forced you to learn new operators. Like, I never played a lot of Smoke until we did that, and I think I had one good game of Smoke on there doing that. And then lately, you know, you guys have seen it. Like, I play Smoke a lot more now. I realize I enjoy this operator.
Right.
So it was kind of like our own way.
It was our rebellion, because it was like, we hate this map. So what are we going to do in rebellion? Well, let's just, you know, like, throw it to the wall and see what sticks. Random operator picks. And so every time that came up, we have no team composition. It's just like, we hate the map. So who cares? You know, like, it's just whatever happens, happens. And then it, like, almost became a way of taking something back from the map that we hated. And I feel like
it actually did kind of make it more exciting. It really did.
Yeah. And I feel like there's certain sites where we've done that, too. Like, people have found ways, like, I mean, everybody talks about Dreaded House with Kid's Bedroom is the worst site in the world. And it is. But people have found ways to sort of, like, it sucks, but here's how we're going to make the best out of it for that site. Or like ours is Skyscraper for Barbecue. You know, like everybody hates that site, but like we found a strat of opening up all the walls with Maestro, and then we, you know, like heavily roam in all the surrounding rooms, and like every single wall and ceiling and floor is blown open to show access to the room. So if they get in, it's like, yep, everybody from all the other six directions are going to nail them. So we found a way to take something that we hated and made it our own, you know? So that's always a cool thing.
What about you, Ice? What do you not like about Siege?
What I do not like about Siege, I mean, I have to agree on the removal of content. I'm gonna go one further, though, in addition to the fact that maps have been taken out of casual, is the removal of 2/3 of the game modes in ranked.
For sure.
Because if you think about it, there was already a system in place that allowed you to choose the game mode you wanted to play in ranked, and it worked just fine. If you wanted to only play bomb and nothing else but bomb in ranked, you could already go under preferences, select bomb, turn off the other two modes, and you would never see them come up in your playlist. So there was already a mechanism for doing bomb only if that's what you wanted to do, and it worked just fine. The fact that you have now denied the secure area players or the hostage players or people that like to play a little bit of everything or two of the three, and you've just, nope, no rank for you. Sorry. Now we've made it so this is the only way you can possibly play. Screw that. That's my big, like, you know, right?
Well, I was going to say, I've actually been thinking about that recently, too. You know, I can't stand that they took it out. And, you know, some of the arguments I see online are, well, do you really deserve being a platinum if you didn't do it, you know, during bomb, which is considered the most balanced game mode? So I was thinking, like, that is somewhat a valid argument. You know, I can see it to an extent. But then, you know, I started thinking, like, other games. And I was like, there's not really ranks in other first-person shooters. Not strongly enough, though. But then... me and I just recently got Dan into it. We've been playing Smite, which is a MOBA, and other MOBAs, they have ranked game modes. And the thing is that you can get ranked, but it's specifically for that game mode. So I don't see why they don't do, you know, maybe I place, you know, platinum in secure area, gold and bomb, and then I could place, you know, bronze and hostage, you know. They could easily give us those ranked game modes and just have multiple types of ranks, you know?
Interesting.
Because that's how those do it.
I'd be down for that. So anybody have anything else?
Yeah, I would say for me, and it's you know, it's really just one thing. I am so bleeping sick. So I'm sick of going into casual and playing against champions and diamonds.
Oh my God, yes.
Especially when it's like clear as day, like we're all, you know, silvers. And we're going against, and it's only, you know, it's really only in casual, but hey, speak for you yourself, know, gold. It's like a I'm gold too, but you know, I hate you.
Former player.
I hate you. But like, it's just so ridiculous. Cause it's like, you know, we're all just in casual trying to have fun. And then all of a sudden we have three diamonds and two champions. And it's like, okay, match starts and we're all dead. Yeah. Okay. That was fun. Match starts and we're all dead. Okay, that was fun. All right, let's defend this. All right, the game's starting. What, seven ashes are in the room already? What's going on here? What the hell?
Like things that are not even so possible start happening.
Exactly. Where did this alien come from? Wrong game. How did I end up in Bolivia? I don't get this. But, you know, it's just one of those things that, like, I feel like that's the only thing that absolutely infuriates me, and I feel like there's such an easy fix to that. But yeah, that definitely, like, anytime, and you know, obviously when it comes to like not having a rank, you know, I can kind of get it, especially if you're kind of on like a winning streak and stuff like that. Yeah, maybe, oh, now you're playing with high golds and platinums. But you know, the first match of casual, you're playing with diamonds and champions. It's like, I play this game twice a week. Yes, that could be a lot for certain people, but it's not for me. And like, I don't play this game religiously. So like going up against people that are like slaughtering me, I know I've made this comparison again, but it's like Michael Jordan going against like middle schoolers. It's just not fun for anyone. It's ridiculous. Fix it.
Right.
I'm sure it's fun for Michael Jordan.
Well, yeah, maybe the first time, but Michael Jordan's not the troll that these champions are.
Okay, so little side digression here. I actually saw somebody on Twitter post this, and I think this is exactly what you're just talking about. This guy posted, he said, newcomer is fun, and then showed a video clip of him going out on the bank alley and just like gunning down all five of the guys spawning there. Like, boom, 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 boom. They're all dead. And then with the caption, newcomer is fun. And then this person was clearly, like, I'm not going to name any names or anything, but this person was a very high-level player. This was somebody that did not belong in newcomer at all, not even by a mile. And it's that kind of thing that you're talking about of, like, in this case, this guy went into a noob playlist to wreck noobs, even though he was very high level. And the excuse that was given was like, well, I haven't reached a clearance level yet for ranked. It's like, well, then be in casual. You still should never go into the newcomer playlist, you know, with what your skill level is.
Right.
You know, even if you have a Smurf account or you switched platforms or whatever your excuse is, like, that is just not a place, you know, where you belong at all. A-Rod doesn't go into the little league game of the T-ballers and start knocking over 4-year olds and like laughing in their faces and taking a dump on them. You know what I mean? Like, that just, you know, you just don't do that kind of thing. But
it's too true. It's
but
too
it kind
real.
Of goes in what you're saying. It's just like, you know, there needs to be a certain consideration for, like, there's just certain kinds of people you don't put up against certain other kinds of people. And by going into newcomer, this guy didn't get matchmaking with them. He went looking for it, but still, that experience
even
is only fun.
About this, sorry. We even kind of talked about this last week, about how this weekend was the, you know, free to play weekend. So people that have never experienced this game were probably trying it for the first time. And, you know, they probably had to play with champions and diamonds too. Mm-hmm. You know, so like in, you know, you were making a really good point about like, if this is their first experience playing this game could be completely wrecked for them and they may never touch it again. And right. You may have just lost something that would have stayed for the entire 5 to 10 year lifespan.
Right.
You know, so stuff like that, just I could talk about that for hours and just how infuriating I am. But I think we should switch topics a little bit, come up with a new idea. I think, Thunder, if you could take one operator to rework the ability for, who would you do and why? But you can't do Tachanka because we've talked about him for way too many times, and we already talked about Castle.
So I've got a couple on my mind, but one is I wouldn't even call it a complete rework, but Alibi, I think she's a solid operator, but with the new addition of Yana and how her holograms work, I think Alibi, her holograms could use some love. And it's very, I think it could be a very simple thing, because I'm pretty much ripping the idea straight out of the Halo games. In Halo Reach, they added a gadget ability for holograms. And the difference is between, you know, there's like, they could send it forward and it would walk. Now, I'm not saying do that, but I think that if you're laying prone as Alibi and you throw down her gadget, her hologram should be prone. If you're crouched when you throw it down, her hologram should be crouched. This constant standing only just kind of, it makes it so much easier to the point where nobody really uses her holograms as a hologram. They just use it as a way for people to, you know, to detect people shooting through a window and know their location for a little bit. I think that by doing these simple things, you know, because if you have a hologram crouched behind cover, that's a lot more believable to think, oh, that's actually her.
Right.
And then also, you know, putting the actual player skin on her wouldn't hurt at all either, you know.
To be able to, like, clone whatever skin that you're actually wearing?
Yeah, like skin and weapon skin and all that. Because supposedly that's how it's going to work for Yana. So pretty much, you know, bring Alibi more up to those standards.
I would love to see them do that too. And there's a reason why I have never bought a uniform or headgear for Alibi. Is because it doesn't make sense if it's never going to match.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the skin thing was like, that would just be a bonus. If they didn't do it, you know, it's fine. They usually trick people who are just fast reaction time to begin with.
Right.
I think the real buff would be, though, like, if you could crouch, if you threw it while crouched, the hologram's going to come out crouched.
I like that.
I think that would be a good
moment. Mm-hmm. There's not many moments where you're going to catch me just standing behind cover. I spend most of my time crouched behind cover. So I think if they did that, it'd be a nice buff. Because, I mean, she has a solid weapon, you know. Everything about her, I mean, she's really good in everything. I just think that her hologram, since she's first come out, could have used a little bit more love. Because it just doesn't seem like the most useful gadget. Like, there's so many other defensive operators. I'm like, I'd much rather have that person than Alibi.
And I think that would be an easy thing to do, too, because you're just copying one of three possible poses. Whereas you're not having to necessarily compensate for an infinite number of uniforms and headgears or whatever, which I would also like to see. I just don't know how much of a drain that is on the resources to be able to kind of ping that information as you play and keep it updated. But I would think that at least changing the stances, as you mentioned, would add a lot of life into that character's ability. And I wouldn't think would be that difficult to do, considering some of the things the other characters in the game can do for complexity.
Right. I also, just to kind of chime in on that, I really love how Sousiege, the comic, has been coming with the Iana Alibi comparisons. And, like, Iana and her clone are just, like, at a movie, like, eating popcorn together, having a great time. And then Alibi is just sadly sitting next to her standing clone. And the person behind her is just like, can you sit down, please? And like, I love it. It's so funny.
Yeah, Sausage is definitely one of my favorite community artists out there. He does such a good job.
Amazing stuff. But what about you, Ice? What operator would you pick?
You know, there's a lot that I would take a look at, but one I think I've always thought this would be a cool one. And as I see Ping 2.0 coming out and I realize that Ping 2.0 achieves many of the same things that IQ does, thinking that perhaps IQ will get some kind of a rework, I've been putting even more thought into this, is that when I am trying to shoot through the floor or ceiling at gadgets I'm detecting above or below me, I find that oftentimes I'll hit the metal cross beams in the floor that I can't see rather than hitting the gadget. And you've got to sit there and kind of like, you know, plink, 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 plink a few times before you can, there's the gap. Okay, now I can shoot through it. I would love her little wrist scanner there, that blue scanner, to show an X-ray of the cross beams between the floor or the ceiling so that you can line up those shots.
I could see that.
Yeah. I think that would be an amazing
rework. That
would
be an easy thing. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if it'd be easy or not. I can't speak for the coders, but I think it'd be cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, touche. And, you know, there is something to be said, because, like, if you are trying to shoot that gadget and you keep hitting those crossbeams, everyone can hear that, you know? So that gives away the secrecy of, you know, trying to take out all the cameras and the gadgets and stuff. I'm into that. I think, I mean, you know, obviously, besides just, you know, making Legion again, I would be very interested in seeing a Finca rework. And what I mean by that is, in context, like, when you think about it, those nanobytes that Finca is sending out to the entire team, how is that possible?
I believe the way they explained it works is that the entire team is already pre-injected with them, and then she activates them when needed, like with a radio signal or whatever.
Yeah, that's dumb.
I'll just tell you what they said.
I mean, it's not dumb. I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say that. But I think to make this more of a situational ability, kind of like everyone else, a lot of their abilities, you know, are for very specific things. I do think that there is kind of an OP aspect while also a complete wasted aspect in, you know, doing the Finca boost and everyone on the team gets boosted. I think it would be really awesome to be able to select one person in addition to yourself. And, you know, I don't know, like, you hit the ability and maybe hit a different direction on, you know, the D-pad or something. But I feel like that would kind of change it, so it's not like everyone gets this buff when you're really only using it for one person.
So then, because that's a pretty big nerf, right? You're going from assisting five people to assisting two people. Would you buff
make it last longer?
Then,
yeah. I mean, you know, the accuracy is already good. Maybe give it a higher overcharge, and maybe last a little bit longer. And maybe what is it? She gets three. Maybe give her a couple of more. Maybe it has a longer respawn time. But I feel like that would be kind of cool.
So no longer be a global ability, though. Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, other people probably listening are like, that's a terrible idea, but I think that'd be really cool. I think that'd be really, because that, like, it's one of those things, and I think this is also coming from me trying to, and I know I kind of talked to you about this a little bit earlier before we started recording, but trying to come up with new ways to play the game and to be more impactful with my choices. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, someone takes Finca because they can do a think buff whenever they want, you know, and it affects the entire team. It can revive a down teammate, you know, other sorts of things like that. So it's just something easy. And yeah, that's cool. But like to be able to like strategically like, okay, this person is hopping into objective instead of buffing everyone and they're all just like sitting around doing nothing, give extra juice to this person that's hopping into objective and give them a fighting chance. Mm. I think that would be cool.
I agree. Her being a global operator is probably not the best. And I have a problem with Lion and Dokkaebi for that same reason. Global operators, I just think tapping a button and affecting the entire enemy team, or in Finca's case, the entire friendly team, is just not a great way to go. You know, I don't know what I would do for how I would change it, though. I like the idea because she's kind of a medic for attackers in a way, and maybe expanding on that some more. So right. I don't know if I would necessarily achieve that with like increasing the overcharge, but maybe the overcharge would still be the max of whatever it is now, but maybe some of the hit points it restored were permanent instead of temporary, fulfilling maybe more the role of an attacking medic in that regard.
That makes sense.
You really got me thinking about Finca right now, and that's all that's on my mind. I kind of like, you know, Captain's idea. I personally am someone who doesn't mind a few global operators when you're assisting your team. I don't like global affecting the enemy team. Because to me, you know, Rook is practically a global operator. A way I would almost buff Finca, like, let's say we kept her gadget the way it is. I'd almost say something that always annoys me is when I'm downed and then somebody hits their Finca while someone's trying to pick me up. And then instead of having, you know, what is it, 25 health when you get picked up now, or just 20, one of those two, I end up getting just 5 all of a sudden.
Yeah, that's rough.
So I'd almost say give her 2 options. You know, if she just taps the buff, you know, on Xbox, it's the bumpers, right? If you just,
right.
You just tap it once, you give everybody the buff. But in order to revive somebody, you need to hold that buff. This way, there's no, you know, like, I need it now, sorry, you're downed, you're just gonna have to, you know, deal with it, because I need my buff now, or everybody else needs the buff now. So maybe, like, she hits it, but if you hold it, then she'll push the button down, like, even harder, like, there's 2 levels of clicks on the button, and that'll actually pick somebody up, and you still get the revive option without hurting your teammates, who, it's like, you know, this way they can still have a chance for your team to come running over, mm-hmm. you know, come pick you up. Because it happened to me, you know, last week. I think Captain was picking me up and somebody on our team was playing Finca. And in the middle of you picking me up, I all of a sudden I got jumped up by Finca and I actually took an impact round to the face because of it.
Yep.
And I died. So having a way to deal with that would be nice.
Well, let's move on to our community Q&A stuff again. Once again, thank you everyone who has been going on the subreddit and doing our questions. Keep doing it. Keep sending us questions. We like to hear what you guys want to ask us. You know, and it's fun to put these on air so you guys can hear us kind of answer that way. But, you know, keep asking questions. And even if we've done one of your questions before, keep asking, because, you know, there's an unlimited number of questions to be asked about this game. So, but our first question comes from Chris Townsend 98. And he says, so I want to hear this not only from a fan's perspective, but a content creator's perspective as well. Why do people feel the need to take the easy way to get to champion or diamond? Cough. Hacking DDoS servers or exploiting glitches from operators like Clash or that doc glitch from our favorite Operation Health.
What was the doc glitch Why? From Operation Health? Thunder, do you remember?
I don't remember. That's my thing. I've been thinking about that since I've read that question. I don't remember a lot of Operation Elf. I think that was when I took one of my, you know, I take my breaks from Siege every now and then. And I remember off the top of my head, like, there was a dock glitch. I sure remember. I just can't remember what.
I just looked it up, and the dock glitch was unlimited stim pistol.
Oh, dang.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember that, but that sounds terrible. So I don't have a really great answer for this because I am also confused why anybody would it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, what, do people just want the diamond charm? That's stupid. Like, why would you want to be put at a level where you can't, like, keep playing where you are? Like, as soon as you get to diamond,
you don't belong there.
If you did DDoSing to get there, or you got boosted to get there, or whatever to get there, like, you're not going to be able to hold that rank. So, like, it's so hollow. And I guess there's some people that don't care. They just, yeah, I got it. Bragging rights, I guess. But, like, that doesn't make sense to me. But I know that it makes sense to some people, and I've never understood it. I suppose hacking is a little different because if you're already hacking the game, then you can hold your rank because you'll just keep hacking. But again, that's so hollow. Like, you didn't earn it. And it's like this false sense of accomplishment that I guess feeds some kinds of people, I guess. But my mind doesn't work that way. You know, I just, I do not understand it. I don't know. Do you guys have any more insights?
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me either. I think that it's like, I thought it was ridiculous just the fact that people pay other people to boost them to a higher rank. Like, what is the point of that? Like, yeah, cool. You get a charm at the end and, like, whatever bragging rights to your friends. Like, yeah, I used to be a diamond. Here's the charm to prove it. But, like, anyone who plays with you is going to see that you suck. So,
right.
It doesn't make – and then, like, just the fact that people – and this is what gets me the most. People that need – to cheat to win, it's the most dishonorable thing there is. Like, why are you exploiting glitches in the game? Like, why are you trying to play in, like, I understand, like, having the upper hand. You know, you set up a situation where someone walks into something where you have the upper hand. That's good. That was skilled. You did something. But, like, to actually go into the game and hack and cheat, that's – I don't understand people that do that. It does not make sense to me, and it is – I want to fight them in real life.
So we don't deal with this a whole lot. Frankly, really at all on console.
PC, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But on PC, they have things like ESP hacks and radar hacks that allow you to see. So, you know, like when you're watching Pro League and you can see the orange outline and the blue outline. So you can see both teams. Like, they can essentially turn that on during a PvP match and they can see the outlines of the players on both teams as they're running around and get the wall hacks on them. And I would just feel like if I was playing the game and that's how I was playing it, even if I got some kind of thrill over, like, oh, I wrecked you, like, after, like, one match, I'd be like, I'm doing nothing. I'm literally doing nothing. I'm standing here and spinning in a circle and shooting through soft breach walls. And, like, I mean, what? Why are you even playing a game? I don't understand.
Right.
My thought is... when it really comes down to it, is it's got to be like a self-esteem, right? Like, you're got so low self-esteem, you have to go do this to make yourself feel better. And apparently, some people get more of a kick off of it than others, because, like, you know, like you were just saying, it's like you would get bored of doing it, right? Apparently, for them, and this is just assuming or hypothesizing, however you want to put it, you know, for them just seeing that big, you know, flawless victory or whatever in that nice KD, that's enough reassurance of happiness they're getting compared to actually playing in the game.
Well, there is a whole subset, and like, I'm not going to get all like deep psychological on this, but there is a subset of people that, I mean, there's been studies done on like people who are internet trolls, you know, whether they comment toxically in forums or chat rooms or whatever. And I'm sure the same kind of logic applies to people that like use these like wall hack cheats or whatever to, or DDoSing or whatever. Like, they're actually experiencing joy by causing other people anger and frustration.
Right.
And I think if there's anything that goes into it, it's not so much, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's not even about like, cool, got a charm, bragging rights. Maybe it is more just like, I derive happiness from causing you like just pure frustration. Suffering. And that makes me feel good about myself, you know?
It's like, I'm miserable, so you're not allowed to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's your answer. We all think it's ridiculous. And
good
we
question.
Don't like those people.
Hard to answer.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I could add to that is I've seen, you know, these things come up through like Facebook or whatever, is if you have a way of hiding that you're hacking, like where it's not super noticeable, you know, like you mentioned, you know, being able to see the highlights through your walls. If you're, and this is more common on PC, you know, most of this hacking and stuff compared to console because of it's easier to hack through, I guess. I don't know the details. I'm not going to claim to. But if you're able to hide it, you could then, you know, start streaming the stuff. You know, because I've got the hacks on one screen, but the screen that's actually streaming, everybody thinks that I'm just really good.
Mm-hmm.
So then people start following. It's like, oh, man, this guy's great. You know, he's the next, you know, big YouTuber, he's gonna, you know, he's gonna be great and all that, and then you're just throwing on this facade that you're amazing. Everyone's gonna start thinking, yeah, he's the best. Because I remember seeing an article, this one, you know, person was streaming CSGO, and then all of a sudden it glitched out real fast, and you could see her actual gameplay screen, and she was playing, and you could see the highlights of people through walls. And they were all like, you're hacking right now. You're not even legit. You've been hacking this whole time. And all of a sudden she's like, oh, I don't know what's happening. And everyone's like, we can tell you're obviously lying. Like, look at this. You know, this isn't something that can accidentally happen.
Right.
And yeah, so it could also just be, you know, they're doing it to throw on this fake face and make everybody think that they're good. And that's how they're getting their fame and attention.
Right.
I didn't even think of that. That puts like a whole new perspective on the BS of that. Cause then like these people are making money off of hacking, and that's even worse.
Crappy people. What can you
do? People suck, man. Yeah, people suck. So the next question, AM Silence asks, what do you think about a feature that allows you to return alpha pack items that you don't want in exchange for the renown you'd get if it had been a duplicate?
100% agree with that.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. I think that there's a lot of the alpha packs that I wind up opening, and it's just like, yeah, I would never put that on anything, so why not? Alternatively, and this had come up in one of our other podcasts, but we talked about the concept of tournaments where you can play for renown or play for skins. I wouldn't mind seeing a way to also get rid of alpha pack items you didn't want that way by putting them up in a prize pool of a custom game tournament, you know, and then like, you know, the winning bracket gets, you know, these five skins that have been put in the pool and these three uniforms, these, you know, three headgears and 10,000 renown, you know, that the prize pool for the tournament or whatever. And like, that could be a way to get rid of extra alpha back stuff that you don't want to.
I think that's cool. I also, so they're the game Rocket League, they're really good at doing this too, because they give you random stuff all the time. Some stuff you can actually trade in. So you'll get like five items of the same like rarity, and you pick those five and you trade it in for something better. whether it be like the same sort of item, like a topper, or maybe it's like a background or something like that, you know, custom wheels or something else. But I feel like that would kind of be cool too, like maybe trade in, you know, 5 common items for an uncommon item, or 5 uncommon items for a rare item or something like that. And maybe like the more, or like once it gets like epic or something, or rare, maybe you have to do like 10 or 15 to get one or something like that. But I think that would be kind of a cool way to change things around a little bit.
Thunder, what do you think?
I see that one, but I could see Dan's idea there, but I think it would come with complications, because I could see people, you know, there's still certain things that you can unlock from an alpha pack, but you could also just go buy through now. So I could see
people
just buying a bunch of these, you know, uncommon things, then trading them in to get a rarity thing. So they'd have to really balance away the cost of renown. But I don't know if Rocket League still has this, but if they do still have it, or I know for sure they used to, you used to be able to just trade items with people.
You can still do that.
Yeah, yep. So you can still do that. So I do have like some, you know, rare or legendary headgears. I'm like, I don't like this personally, like the IQ predator mask, but you know, I'm sure there's somebody I could trade that for,
right?
You
know, I've actually experienced that too.
They don't win.
There's a very rare universal color skin, plasma pink, and I wound up unlocking it. It was a legendary unlock for a universal skin. I will never put plasma pink on anything ever, and yet other people are like, oh my god, I wish I had that. And I'd be like, I would so trade that to you in a heartbeat if I could. You know, give me something else that I would want. I would totally give you that. Like, I'll never put that on anything.
For sure. Absolutely.
I'll give you my bowler hat Thatcher for the plasma winning skin. Because I
what? What? That is unheard of, Thunder. That is unheard of.
No, I'd never rock that skin. I love Pat too much. But yeah, I think having to trace this would be great, or just the original idea of trading it in for renown. Because honestly, anymore, if I get an alpha pack, I'm like, please be a duplicate.
Well, I think those have both been some really great questions, and we've definitely packed a lot into this week's episode. I want to thank Thunder Sniper for coming on and joining us. It's been a blast having you on. We do, you know, as we were saying, we play with you, you know, every week. So that's really cool to have you on and be part of the experience of what we do on the show here. As Captain was mentioning earlier, also please go ahead and submit your community Q&A questions on the Rainbow Six subreddit. If you haven't gone over there already, please do so. You can find us again. That's on reddit.com. Look for the Rainbow Six Radio subreddit. That's S-I-X, not the number 6. Rainbow Six Radio subreddit. And join over there. You can be part of our community discussions that are going on. We, Captain and I, are also over there, so you can ask us questions and interact with us. Share your gameplay, highlights, clips, you know, post your own threads and questions, whatever you want to do, and get this community growing. And from all of us, we will catch you when we do next week's podcast. Thanks a lot.
This has been Rainbow Six Radio. Be sure to tune in next time for even more Rainbow Six talk, news, and information.